Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level. Hello, and welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast. I'm Katie Claxton, part of our Delta Force marketing team here at Zenix. On today's episode, we take a look back at our most recent Leadership Lessons webinar, The Engagement Dilemma, an Executive Wake-Up Call. Zenix CEO and founder Casey Cunningham speaks to top executives from four of the nation's leading mortgage companies about the strategies and best practices they have put into place to engage their workforce and how this culture shift has transformed the way they do business. We hope you find these conversations to be informative and insightful. Take it away, Casey.
All right, everybody, let's get started. My name is Casey Cunningham. I am going to be your host today. Welcome to Zenix. Today is about providing as much value to the industry and to all of you as possible. If for any reason this audio is not working for you and you need better sound, please don't hesitate to actually look very carefully at the phone number there, and you can write it down just in case you have trouble with the audio. You can also just click the word phone call on your screen and it will tell you exactly how to dial in. So for those of you who have never been to Zenix, let me just say welcome. For those of you who know me personally, let me also say welcome. Okay, I got to get me off the screen twice, so I'll take me off for just a moment. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know my background. For those of you who don't, we've given you just a quick snapshot of my background and what I have done in our industry. I guess the most important part of my resume that you can see on the screen is the last bullet, right? That is, I am a mom. I have two beautiful little girls who should, based on my age, I should be a grandmother, but I have an elementary school children and a middle school child. So I have a 10 and 13 year old. I have an English bulldog, a miniature schnauzer. I'm a huge athlete and I love to fly fish. So that's on the personal side. On the professional side, I founded Zenix 17 years ago with one objective, and that is to help an entire industry and to help elevate the results. So today is very personal for me, and let me introduce our guests who are going to help me in answering the engagement dilemma that is facing our industry. So with that, everyone, we'll do a quick sound check. I'll make sure they can say hello so you can hear their voice, and then I'll explain to you what is the engagement dilemma and what does engagement mean. So first, our first guest is Fabi. Fabi is a senior VP of an Eastern Division Manager of Planet Home Lending. Fabi, are you there?
Yes, I am, Casey. Hello.
Fabi, are you there? I lost you, Fabi.
Casey, I'm here. I'm here, Casey.
You're there? Hold on one second, Fabi. All right, I got you, Fabi. Give me another sound check quickly, Fabi. There you are.
There you are? All right, good. Can you hear me?
Yes, I turned my speaker down. That was a user error. My next guest is Steve Adamo. He's the U.S. Head of Home Lending with Santander Bank. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon, Casey, and thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
What a privilege to have you. Ron Zack, he's the president and CEO of NRL Mortgage. Ron, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, Casey.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. And then we have Rich Phillips. He's the executive vice president of sales for American Mortgage Service Company. And Rich, obviously, I'm just a huge fan of yours and what you've brought to your team. Let's just make sure you're there.
We are here, Casey.
All right. So we're four for four, everyone. So with that, let's just pivot into, let me talk about what is engagement. Because when we put into the market that engagement is a challenge, and it's incredibly important. Why? Well, engagement is about occupying, attracting, involving someone's interest. It means getting them to lean in and participating or becoming involved. Now, if you have at any time you have questions for me or the panel, don't hesitate to put them in the questions area. I'll be watching for it. But let me give you in context. I'm not sure if anyone's ever seen this diagram. And by the way, yes, we're happy to share this next slide with you because I think many of you may want it. The engagement dilemma is pretty substantive because let me show you a diagram of the state of the workforce. This picture that you're looking at today is based on the Corporate Leadership Council. They actually did a study of how you drive employee performance and retention through engagement. It was a worldwide study. They did over 50 different industry or 27 different industries, 50 different companies, 50,000 people. And they found out that almost every organization throughout the world, if you will, and companies like you and me, are having an engagement dilemma. Now, we're finding that the majority of employees are up for grabs. So let me just sort of show you what I mean. When you break your sales force or your entire company up into five tiers, they basically have concluded that 13% are the ones on the way out the door. They're the naysayers, they're the underperformers, non-producers. 20% is leaning towards disengagement. And then you've got the guys dead middle. They're neutral, they're agnostic. And then to the right, you've got 27% of your workforce that's leaning towards engagement. And then about 11% are the true believers. These are your top producers, top performers. And these are the ones I would call who've drank the Kool-Aid and who have plugged into your company and your system, your processes, and are killing it. Now, here's the key. If you take these three in the middle, that's where the opportunity lies, but that's also where the greatest risk lies, because 76% of your workforce is not fully committed or fully uncommitted. So when you look at that, you go, man, what an opportunity. And today, the executives I have with me are going to share what they've done to help shift this entire production curve, if you will, and where they've been able to get more engagement. Now, according to the Corporate Leadership Council, there are 8 different levers of engagement. So I'll put them up on the screen. Again, happy to share all of this with you. The direct manager has a play. The senior executive team impacts engagement. Your compensation plans, your benefit plans, and onboarding. I'm telling you this, I know all of you onboard new people to your companies on a regular basis, but the power of that onboarding process and the impact it can have for how they feel about your culture is huge. The day-to-day work, are they actually attracted to, is it meaningful work that they have? Learning and development, of course, that's near and dear to my heart. And then organizational culture, and that your culture is an important factor for engagement. So today we're going to talk about 4 of those: the direct manager, the day-to-day work, the learning and development, and the organizational culture. And so let's just jump right in. We're going to start asking questions. I am going to take myself off of video so you can actually hear the gentleman, and look forward to, if you have any questions, again, I'll be watching the screen and we'll hopefully have time for Q&A at the end, everyone. All right, gentlemen, let's jump right in. The first topic for today is the direct manager. You guys are senior executives in your company. You have multiple layers and multiple people in positions. The question I have is, what does you or your organization do right now, and I'm going to say do well, if you will, to equip your managers to lead? So the question on the table is, what do you or your organization do well to equip your managers to lead? Let's get started. Steve, you want to answer that one for me?
Sure. Thanks, Casey. Thanks for the question. Welcome, everybody. Again, I'm Steve Adamo. I'm at Santander. Been here for 4 years, been in the financial services industry for about 32 years, and been in the mortgage business most of that, from a loan officer to running various businesses at various times. You know, I think, like, you've got to completely invest in leaders, in managers. Not all managers are leaders, and not all leaders are managers. And trying to combine those two people to become strong leaders is really important. It needs constant investment, and we spend a lot of time on constant investment, whether it's specific learning and development teams, part of our business as usual, regular BAU day-to-day work. And then obviously some of the investment that we've made with the team that you run, Casey, at Zinnix. So, you know, we are very committed to equipping the managers to lead and the leaders to manage. And then really just trying to elevate everybody to, you know, just to better performance day to day in the regular BAU. But you got to do it through investment. It's dollars, it's time, it's energy, it's communication, it's integrity, it's motivation. I mean, it's all of those things. But those things are things you've got to be able to be committed to invest in day to day. So we're pretty happy to do it. And so far, so good.
Bobby, how are you equipping your managers to lead?
You know, Casey, I think that's a great question to start off with, because honestly, one of the reasons I did choose Planet Home Lending is because they don't have a master template for branch managers across the board. They're customizing each manager to look at their market individually and uniquely and tell us what is needed in their market space. So from the get-go, they're already leading us into the market that we want to enter into. So they're already empowered to do with the right things. And with that trust, we then build out the perform accordingly what they think they're going to be needing. And then we manage them accordingly. Now, I use the word manage, and I don't like that word. I do want to add one thing real quick, is one of the things that I've learned over the years is that I really don't hire people that I want to manage. I hire people that I want to support. And I think once we find the right people that we can support, it's easy for them to lead me to the market space that we're trying to enter.
So, Ron, do you want to share what are you doing today to equip your managers?
Sure. So, Ron Zach here, been in business 20 years and so on and so forth. But first off, I definitely want to reiterate Steve is right on point. I think it is an investment. It's not just financial. There's time, there's energy, there's everything. So I think you have to be bought into that. And then I would probably lean a little bit into what Fabi said as well, which is, maybe in different words, but for us, you know, we're pretty flexible as an organization, and we truly believe that you have to hire self-driven and self-motivated managers. And the leading is going to help, especially with the investment and the time that we put into it. But we look for a very, you know, specific person that's already self-driven and self-motivated. We don't want to micromanage. And we don't think we need to, especially, you know, out in the branch in the field. If you hire the right person, you know, I think it takes care of itself, especially with the investment we put into them. Obviously, you know, we use the tools as well, which does cost money and are important in our day to day.
And Rich, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Steve and Ron, they're right on. We try to empower the managers so that they have all the tools they need to do the job. We're not here to provide the leadership. We're here to provide support. Our whole organization all looks at this as they don't work for us. We work for them. And similar to what Steve talked about, we have a very flat organization. Our managers call each department if they have an issue. They talk directly with the people they need to talk to that can make that decision. And our whole basis is to support whatever they need. We constantly are asking them on a day-by-day basis, what can we do better to support you? And it's worked out well because most of our managers are producing managers in the branches, and then we support their salespeople on the same concept.
You know, it's interesting, gentlemen, and for everybody listening in, I'm asking questions that I do not know their answers. So this is going to be a little fun because I wanted it to be as organic as possible where we can just have a conversation. But I'm hearing, gentlemen, that there is this new era of potentially the industry shifting into non-producing managers. I'm just curious right now, what percentage of your managers are producing versus non-producing? So let's start with Steve.
Sure. So right now we don't have any producing managers, and we had producing managers, and you know, constantly looking at additional ways to enhance the sales force. But I'll tell you the kind of the reasoning. So right now there are no producing managers, and when we made the change, we really wanted managers that worked very closely with their sales teams in a reasonable distribution, somewhere between 12 to 1 or 16 to 1. and there's some a little higher and some a little lower, but really about the focus on the individual and not get clouded by their own types of production, but really very specific. It's not so much coaching and leading all the time. I mean, it's not so much managing and leading all the time. It's a lot of coaching, right? So, so we don't have producing managers so that the manager can actually coach and then lead and train and help educate. So, but, you know, constantly looking at sales models all the time, Casey. And, you know, for us today, that's how we're doing it because of the specific focus on the team.
So Steve, you evolved, right? Because did you have producing managers at one time?
We did. And we evolved, you know, into the non-producing manager, really very specifically about that team concept, and the team concept led with a specific coach. And yeah. That model is working pretty well for us.
All right. So, Rich, are you on the opposite extreme?
We are on the opposite extreme. We have about 45 branches, and they're all run by producing managers. We have zero non-producing managers. Each one has their own P&L, but it's interesting because they have to balance. When we hire the individuals, they want to come on as producers. They're high producers. They also want to have some people in the branch that work for them. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some are one-person branches. So our concepts are a little different. You know, from the sales side, if we have a branch that has a couple people in it, again, I don't know who said it, but we try to hire people who are self-starters. We try to hire salespeople that want to sell. And not to do a commercial, but, you know, Zenix has helped us a lot with the fact that of all the different courses, they're able to evaluate the individuals, and they actually help us take our people to the next level because our managers are busy originating and really don't have the time to individually work with them. So the partnership we formed with you all has helped dramatically.
Bobby, what about you? Are you have producing managers?
So I think I'm probably in the middle of Steve and Rich. You know, I mean, we do have a number of producing branch managers nationwide in all our branches. And then there are certain managers that are non-producing, and they're supporting those branches in their growth and their development with their sales force and obviously partnering with Zenix and the training that goes along with that. But, you know, to Rich's point, I think for me, especially when I came over to Planet Home Lending, I had a different model in my mind than I had previously. And the model really was to find a producing branch manager who knew a market really, really well, could come in and then build around that branch manager. You know, eventually going into more of a non-producing role, but to start off more as a producer himself or herself and then work into a non-production role. I think that's right now, and I don't know, I know you started the conversation off, Casey, with saying you're hearing that more and more non-producing managers are out there. I'm kind of hearing the opposite, which is I'm hearing that more non-producing managers are, I mean, more producing managers are being hunted down rather than the non-producing managers. So I think we may be hearing different things on the opposite ends here.
Yeah, Fabi, I'm thinking what's going on in the market. There was a trend towards non-producing, and I think it's pulled back. I think you're right.
Exactly. I get more calls right now from non-producing managers looking for a role in my company that I'm actually saying, really, we just don't have that position available at this time. As we grow organically, we may in the future, but today, that's not the role that I'm looking for.
So let me ask, and Ron, you can answer. This is a new question, gentlemen, because here's my big one, right? If you're doing two roles, producing loans and managing people, right? One, it's almost impossible to do one exceptionally well, or to do both exceptionally well. One of them, you may do better than the other, and some of them, you're skilled to do one better than the other. Do you feel that the industry has shied away from the non-producing manager? I mean, Steve, I love the fact you have non-producing, but I'm going to guess the reason the industry has shied away is they can't show the value of it because they haven't been able to really define the role and hold people accountable to certain metrics. Like, hey, if you're a non-producing, we're going to equip you to build a region, a division, an area, if you will, and here's your number. But most companies don't have the career pathing to get people to that place. Would y'all agree with that? Ron, do you agree with that?
Well, so this is Ron. So I'm 90% producing. We have a very small handful of non-producers, most of which, minus a couple, I think we have six that are non-producing, two of which came in that way. The other ones came in and kind of flipped into that model down the road. So I can see it both ways. I mean, historically, I think 15, 20 years ago, it was kind of a non-producing world, and you're dealing with these bigger companies, right? The Countrywides, the New Centuries, especially in the retail platforms, where they were all non-producers, and they were coaching and training and motivating and hiring and doing all the stuff that we expect our managers to do today while they're producing. I think the difference is when you're recruiting, we're looking for production. We don't have the roles like Bobby and other people I think mentioned on this call that are willing to hire a person that was a regional, because we're a lot more, I think in general, we're just flatter organizations out there, and we don't want the expense and the risk of an area or a regional type role, which costs money, cost guarantees, to hope he's going to build something around him when you can hire and recruit just like they do, you know, in reverse, production teams that the manager is already a production manager, has a team following him, and then they come on board and they're already in a production mode. I do think you're right. I do think it's very hard to do both very well in general, right? I think it's very hard to produce and be a really good manager and leader of people and do the recruiting and the training and the motivating and everything that we want them to do. Exceptional. I think you end up with either one that's, you know, 80% and the other one does 20 or 30%. And so if they're producing at a decent level, right? $750, $1 million a month as a production manager, and the team is doing X behind that, it usually makes more sense. And that production carries their salary and their guarantees and whatever else it may entail, which is less risky for the organization. So I think that's why we don't look for either, by the way. We look for leaders, kind of period. I think just to make sure we're clear, it just so happens that the producing manager role is an easier hire because there's already production and team to follow, rather than a guy with, you know, absolutely no production and he's starting a market or a territory and I have to pay him with no production because he's non-producing. So I can see it both ways.
Yeah, somebody actually put in the comments, and I'll see if this is a true or false. That's all you got to give me. Non-producing managers have a hard time keeping respect of the sales team. Ooh.
Yeah, so it's Steve. I don't see that at all.
I would say false also.
False?
If you have the right non-producer, I would say false.
Okay, lots of falses coming in. All right, nobody said true on that one.
I would probably say with the people that we've hired, I would say that that's probably true, Casey. People, the further you are away from the origination side of it, from a technical standpoint, from the sales side of it, I think more and more people become feel that the value is less, and within our organization, they're going to our salespeople, and a lot of our management positions that are in corporate that support these people on a daily basis, they also originate. So just about everyone in this company is originating. So I would have to probably say more truth to your statement in our world.
Well, that was a statement that was put in the chat room, and I got some opinions, man, from all the attendees around the country. I got true. I got false. I got true, 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 true. Let me just jump in here and say, if the person is not a leader, then you will not have respect for them. That's the bottom line, whether they're producing or non-producing.
That's a given, right?
Yeah. I don't think it has to do with whether they produce or don't produce. It's, are they a leader and are they equipped to lead, not just manage a file, manage, all of the, what we'll call the firefighting with the branch, but are they leading people to follow them? So anyway, we'll move on, but man, lots of opinions around the country. I love y'all's that you're actually different on the panel. All right, here's another quick question, then we're going to move on to the next topic that I think everybody wants to hear about as well. But just a quick question, are your producing managers, right? Because required to also be recruiting as part of their job. So, Steve, I won't ask you because I know all your non-producings have got to be recruiting. Bobby, yes or no?
Yeah, and so here's the thing. I mean, there's a concept that I believe in, Casey, that really has kind of molded what I'm doing here, is, and I call it the three-legged stool concept. I heard it from somebody. I don't know where it came from. And what it is as a producing branch manager, there's three requirements. You know, there's production, there's raising brand awareness, and then there's recruiting. And one of those three legs, when it is broken, the whole stool falls apart. So what I've tried to do is let them handle two of those three legs, and I handle the third. And that third is recruiting. Because I do feel that for a producing branch manager, just focusing on their production and raising the brand awareness in the new market space or an existing market space is more than a full-time job. And recruiting, to a certain extent, probably falls to about 10 to 20% of their weekly schedule. So if I can keep them at the first two legs, I'm perfectly happy with that.
Okay. Ron, what about you? Producing managers, are they required to recruit?
Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely want them to recruit, and they're required to recruit. If they don't, it's just going to affect their pay. We help them recruit. We have recruiters in-house, and we have a team and a system that we use to help them. But no question, they're required to recruit.
Rich, what about you?
Again, we're somewhat different. We don't require our managers to recruit. Most of them, if they do recruiting, it's building teams for themselves, not for the branch. And if there's recruiting in the branch, then normally I'm involved and they would give me the name and I would do the recruiting and try to pair them up. But again, most of our managers are not required to recruit. They're focused on their personal production and how to take it to a higher level.
Man, I got a lot of comments about you guys and agreeing and disagreeing about the whole producing and non-producing. Okay, let's move to the next topic because I want to come back in a moment possibly about rookies. But for now, let's move to the day-to-day work. This is about everyone that's listening in, about connecting your employees to something larger that's meaningful. And I think, you know, I run an organization like the rest of you. My question I have to ask myself every day is, do I believe that my employees sense their work has meaning? And I want to ask you guys, how are you helping, is there anything specific that you're doing to help connect your employees to something larger and that it's meaningful work? So who'd like to go first? Bobby, you want to jump on?
Sorry, Casey. Yeah, so listen, this is a great question, and you're kind of blindsiding me on this one, quite honestly, because I saw this in the list, and I didn't think you were going to go there. So,
wow.
But here's the, yeah. To me, when I look back at how I got connected into the mortgage business, you know, it was really more about community for me because I came from an immigrant community. And I began to see different things happening outside that community that I was a part of. And they would invite me to their family affairs after the loan closing and stuff like that. I think it's important for me and the guys that are with me to be part of that community. So we are looking into doing more community affairs. Along with that, as far as like the bigger picture for me and Planet Home Lending goes, we are committed to partnering up with the National Forest Association. So we're part of connecting our employees with replanting trees, doing those kind of things. I think, you know, along the way, I think those are helpful in making sure that I'm trying to put the right words here, Casey, but be part of something larger than just a paycheck. I think that's the right way to say it.
You got it. Steve, your thoughts? What are you doing to help connect your employees to their work?
Yeah, thanks. I think meaning means different things to different people, right? For us and for me and the teams here, you know, we want to make sure that we take care of our customers, our colleagues, and the communities where we live and work. So, you know, that how much meaning comes out of each of those categories and taking care of the people that we live and work with each and every day. And obviously our customer is at the core and the center of everything we do, which creates really just nice meaning. And, you know, all of our managers I originated, and I remember the invites to the cookouts and things that Bobby's commenting about. Our teams do the same. But in addition to all of that, for me and our teams here, you're out of sync if you're not connected to your community. If we don't give back to the communities where we live and work, if there's not some real meaningful direction on how to give back to the communities while taking care of the customer at the core of what we do and then taking care of each other in the process. So I'd like to think that our teams have meaning and that the day-to-day jobs bring meaning. And in those
three buckets.
Got it. Rich, want to add something?
Yeah, I mean, in our world, our managers, or we kind of look at it in stages. We talk to them about what they want and the meaning of the value that they add to the branch. They feel like they have ownership of the branch because they're fully empowered to run the branch the way they want. And each one of them have a different objectives. So the younger group is trying to pair into people who know how to sell and how to do the business. They sometimes form younger teams with the group. The older individuals, you know, they like the fact that we have a program called, you know, Income for Life, where we hire people in under them and they build that team up so that someday they can slowly retire and get some kind of an override for life on that volume. So we try to create programs where they feel like they have a long-term value of being at this company, and there is a purpose at the end for them as well, Casey.
All right. So Ron, do you want to add anything to that?
I agree with everybody. You know, Fabi and Steve, right on point. I think Rich, we also at our organization, we also give them that flexibility, so they kind of have quite a bit of meaning. It's up to them,
right?
Kind of at their discretion. I think something else that I think that we do, we allow the associates to make decisions on major things that impact certain departments or the company. And I think that creates kind of a sense of ownership in their work. So, you know, whether we have a small advisory council of eight specific managers that come in, they're actually involved in making decisions. As an example, Casey, you'll remember we flew her down before we decided on Zinnix as a choice for, you know, coaching, et cetera. We had five other people come down and we chose Zinnix. They were involved in that. If they said no to Zinnix, Zinnix would be the one we were with. So I think that gives them true worth and a bigger picture than just the branch perspective, and also corporate managers, right? Because we're really talking about two different things, almost, branch managers and corporate managers, meaning, you know, people at the corporate office. So we give them kind of a real sense of decision making at a higher level, and they feel more involved, I think.
Well, this is a real passionate topic for me, and I'm going to put my video back on so everybody can see me. So those of you who might just be listening in, you want to look at me in the eyes, and or you might want to come back, because I'm going to give you just some this isn't meant for me to talk, but I feel compelled and led to share with you something important. You know, the industry, the social media world, we've all been exposed to, it's about having meaning. The engagement dilemma and retention dilemma in our industry is going to continue to be a problem until we all realize that we want meaning in our life, right? So, and I am so blessed by an amazing team. But what we do at Zinnix, I thought I'd give all of you that are listening in just a tactical piece to help. And everything you said, gentlemen, is I loved it. Love that you're giving back to the community, you're doing, et cetera. On a regular basis at Zinnix, when students send us a story or we get a survey results that says, you've changed my life, you've impacted me immensely, I had no idea the power, blah, blah, blah. I purposely, and my leadership team, send it out to the team to make sure that they know that they aren't just facilitators of knowledge and content. They are not just someone behind the scenes that's working as an admin, but that they truly are moving people's lives. So I don't know how much all of you do on a regular basis or make it intentional, but the job, the profession in the mortgage industry, to me, is one of the most amazing professions, because we get to impact people in one of the most beautiful times in their life, right? That is three things most Americans want: get married, buy a home, and have a child. Well, we get to impact them as part of the American dream. So I don't know how much you guys are driving that story after story after story into your companies, but I highly recommend it to remind them that these are not just loans, but that these are people. So anyway, that's Casey's quick, high level help to connect. Service is one of our core values too. So we're serving in the communities to help make sure we are connecting people naturally. We don't force it, but to meaningful work. So anyway, that's I'll stop pontificating on that one. So do any of you do that, by the way, on a regular basis and make it intentional to share your customer stories?
for sure.
Every time, Casey, we
do it in every single category. We celebrate, you know, lots of successes along the way. So we have, you know, kind of the Wall of Fame. We rotate it monthly with the people who get the most of, you know, whether it was a challenging situation, whether we helped somebody through something that was different, or somebody went above and beyond to get the nice note of thanks for putting me in the dream home that I didn't think I'd be able to get in, or my first home, or the thanks for helping me downsize when somebody's having challenges, you know, sick parents or whatever it might be, and they need to downsize to lower bills. We get all the letters all the time. We celebrate them every second of every day.
Mm, love it, love it, love it. So you could do best story of the month. Whoever sends you into corporate, the best customer story, so to help make it intentional. So I'm going to move on to learning and development. This was an important factor of engagement. It talks about personalized development drives effort. So obviously this is near to dear to my heart, since that's why we exist. And I'm just an open-ended question for all of you. What kind of development programs do the four of you have for sales, leaders, manager, ops? So just general, do you use outsourced vendors? Do you use do you build it yourself, et cetera? So who would like to start there?
This is Rich, Casey. I can start. We studied this for a long time, the sales part of it. And, of course, I mean, we signed up with Zenix. We've been with them a long time. I've been around them a long time. We just felt that it was imperative that we have a program that our salespeople have the option to be able to go into and understand their strengths and weaknesses, which is evaluated through the course, and then put them on a plan to help them grow and help them become better at what they do. We encourage it every day for people to use it. We pay the fees, and it's something that we just feel is part of our program. We've integrated it into our system. And, I mean, we do it because it's less expensive for us to use you all than for us to do it. Plus, we have expertise on your end that we could not pay for. I don't mean it to be an ad, but that's the truth.
Well, I didn't know what you were going to say, but I appreciate that. I didn't tell you y'all couldn't talk about a competitor, so, but that's okay. Thank you so much, Rich. And by the way, Rich, we are privileged to be a partner. Let's see, Bobby.
Well, obviously, Casey, I mean, just like Rich was just talking about, we partnered up with you guys, and we've had some, you know, incredible stories coming out. And I know personally myself, Atlanta, Maryland, near and dear to my heart. The manager there has been remarkably touched by your coaching from Zenix. You know, the thing when we go beyond the sales force, I think you kind of talked about non-sales people, if I'm not incorrect there, which is ops. And we do a lot of training for our ops people. We just hired a few additional people come on board to cover more of a nationwide footprint so that they're able to dive in even deeper. When we roll out new products, new programs, we're making sure that our lock desk, our closing department, you know, they're all trained on those different products. Especially with our focus on non-QM products, we brought on a non-QM specialist just for the sole purpose of training our entire company on non-QM product offerings. So we do make an investment in those, in that, you know, I know that you talked about that a few weeks ago with me. We are making the investment into that learning and development piece of our ledger.
All right, Steve.
Sure. Look, you know, learning and development are core to what we do. We partner with Zenix as an example, and have for a couple, 3 years now. It's been very beneficial. We also do some internal development programs, whether it's accelerated development for leaders or other types of investments for managers and ops and so on. I think it's a critical piece of running a business, making sure that that our teams have the ability to have appropriate learning and development, whether it's investment in their college educations, or, you know, and we cover the cost. So we view
Zinnix as example, as an investment in the individual and in the team. And we cover that cost as an investment in helping them continue to grow and thrive in their career.
All right, so I want to. I've got quite a few comments coming in about what they agreed with on our previous comment. I want to open up the question to everyone that's listening in. What are they doing to drive personalized development into their company? And I'll give everybody a chance to answer that's attending right now. And gentlemen, so Ron, you haven't had a chance to answer that. What do you do specifically? What kind of development programs do you have?
So we use all three. So we have self-training handbooks that are created internally. We use some third parties for certain educational pieces, depending. It could be even compliance related, et cetera, which is we use Knowledge Coop. That's kind of all self-initiated with some of the handbooks and the training material that we've created internally through our corporate training. And then we have an internal corporate training department. We have a huge training room that we dedicated in our suite for trainings because we provide them in-house monthly, so we invest quite a bit of money in that. And then obviously externally with Zinnix as an example from a sales perspective, we thought that was actually our weakness. We cover a lot of really, really great training internally and with some third parties, and we thought the sales piece was really where we were lacking, and that's why we joined forces with you guys on that piece.
So can I ask everybody that's listening in, and you, the four of you, my question for you is the industry at large does not, and tell me if this is true or false, but I believe I'm pretty accurate on this one. The industry at large does not have a budget for professional development. In other words, there's not a line item that says professional development. It might be compliance and onboarding training is on your line item. Is that a true statement that the majority of the industry in your mind does not have a line item for professional development?
I would say that's true.
So 100%
true, Casey, in my opinion.
Yep.
Okay. Ron?
It's Steve. I would say. We do have a line item in learning and development, but I think as a whole for professional development, I think it's true.
Yeah, we do also for learning and development and onboarding and specifics, but no.
Not for professional development.
Casey, could I ask a question? Are you talking about professional development through performance coaching, or are you talking about attending conferences, participating in off-site seminars? Okay. What exactly does that entail?
Well, when I say professional development, I am specifically talking about sales, leadership, training, true professional skills development, not compliance, not how to onboard with someone. And I'm not even talking about events. So now, Fabi, you just opened the door for me because I got to say something. Remember, I told you I was going to say something and you're all like, what is she going to say? Because I wouldn't tell this group. There's something that is driving me personally crazy. I'm really interested in hearing everyone that's attending to please put comments, give me your thoughts. Again, go to the question section and you can just give me your comments there. But gentlemen, I hear, there's tons of conferences around the country, tons of them. And I don't have to even tell you which ones they are, where it's a day, a 2-day, a 3-day. I know there's somebody on stage that's trying to give a tip, possibly trying to sell their wares. The amount of money that lenders are sending people to these conferences where you take airfare, food, attending the conference, et cetera, it's in the thousands per person. Is that on the budget instead of professional development? That's more sustainable, because I think everybody listening in would agree. When you go to a conference, you get fired up, you leave, you don't do anything. Now, I could be completely speaking out of turn, but it is driving me nuts. My question is that in your budget at large, where to go to these conferences and you're sending mass number of people and not professional development? So,
Casey, this is Rich.
That's why I asked you that question. Oh, I'm sorry, Rich. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, that's why I'd ask you that question, because I was told, when you and I discussed this a few weeks ago, that we do have a line item for conferences and that kind of stuff, and they call that performance development. And then obviously learning about, you know, Zinnix for the past several years and having a different mindset. I'm a big proponent of conferences, Casey, so you and I may be on the opposite end of this topic. Sure. I do think that they add a really value add to the professional development of loan officers and so on. You know, I don't know if I would ever use them as a competitive edge, say a performance coaching class versus a one day event at a conference. I think they're two different things and they both can supplement each other.
Okay.
So I think I'm probably, this is Ron. I think I'm probably more on Casey's side of it. I think, and again, I think it depends on the conference, depends on the person. I think that's always kind of first and foremost. But when there's a conference in Vegas and they're getting pumped up and they're coming back here, I don't think they're retaining a lot of that, let's be honest. So it does cost thousands, right? It's hotel, flight, plus the event itself. It costs many, many thousands per person. And so I don't think Mastermind or whatever else is the go-to. I think there's other reasons why people go. And I think if you're the right person for them, wherever they may be, they can help you. But you know, you have to be self-driven. You have to want to get better, not want to just go party in Vegas.
All right, Steve, you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, it's Rich, Casey. We've learned over time in all the years I've been at this that there's a large amount of people who really are not interested in learning more. You can do whatever you want to do. You can send them to conferences. You can spend the money on them. But unless someone is willing to want to learn more and develop, it's difficult. So we focus on the people who are truly committed to it, that are willing to share part of the expense, realize they're going to have, you know, long-term coaching. They're going to be held accountable to things. And again, that's through Zinnix, not through us, which, you know, if they're wanting to do this and wanting to put the investment in, we'll work with helping them on the investment. If they complete the stuff, we normally would pay the whole thing. A lot of people are at a point, I think, in their lives where the learning, and I don't know who said it earlier, but you go to the conferences and, you know, there's probably 1-2% that come back and have something they come back and implement in their system. The rest of them, it seems to be forgotten when they leave. So that's just our thoughts.
All right. So, Fabi, I think we're actually in agreement, but in slight disagreement. I like the conferences, but it shouldn't be in place of professional development, right? You got to have a blended approach because it might fire
right.
them up. But I'm really curious why our industry line items that and not professional development.
Well, I mean, Casey, I think if you take something like the organization NAMBA, you know, and I met you there last May in Atlanta, I think NAMBA is an amazing organization, and their conferences, I feel, were on point. They provided just the right amount of learning and the right amount of networking. So I think there's something that you gotta, I don't know how to say, but there is a place for those conferences. I don't think it's the one thing that a company should focus on and say, hey, everybody, we're going to go to NAMBA or we're going to go to Next or whatever. But I do feel that there is a place for them, but is it going to take my loan officer to the next level of their career? I don't think that's the case either.
Okay. All right. Let's go to organizational culture, because I think, man, this is where everybody in the industry that I talk to on almost a regular basis talks to me about their culture. And this is where you really get your dividends if you've got an amazing and vibrant one. And I guess where you can define a culture is what you celebrate. Okay, so this is a unique one. I'm going to assume most of you have, you would agree that you have a unique culture. So my question for you is, describe it as quickly as you can, and then I'll ask the next one. So I'll give, who would like to go describe their culture?
This is Ron. I mean, our culture in one word is fun. You know, we've had awards recognized in many publications, and that's kind of what our employees define us as in terms of culture.
Okay, Bobby.
So I think for us, the culture here is more entrepreneurial, more flexible. You know, we're definitely experienced in many mortgage cycles. So there's a lot of knowledge that we can share with people that we bring on board. But, you know, I think I know this may sound kind of corny, but there is a saying that we have here, is that one planet, one team. And I think that really speaks the whole thing for me.
Got it. All right, let's do Mr. Adamo.
Yeah, I think in home loans, we focus on the three things I spoke about earlier, and it basically is our culture, taking care of our customers, taking care of our colleagues, each other, and taking care of our communities. And I think everybody's lined up on that cultural of take care of our customers, our colleagues, and our communities.
Got it. Rich?
Ours is similar to a lot of those, but we just firmly believe that empowering our people, giving them the ability to control their destiny, that's pretty much what we work on.
I love, by the way, all of you gentlemen, how succinct you were in that answer. And I felt like I really could feel your culture by that quick answer. So let me ask you as well, how do you evaluate whether or not you're having success in building a positive culture? Is it retention? Is it awards? Who'd like to go first on that one?
Ms. Rich, I mean, the retention is probably, I think, the key part. If you've got an organization where people have been here 15, 20 years originating, given the fact of all the recruiting that goes on and all the things that are done out there, I think that's a big part of it. Also, we do yearly rallies for our top people, our chairman's club. That group's been together for 10, 15 years, and they just can't wait to get together to see each other and socialize from that standpoint. And a lot of it's got to do with the messaging that comes across all the time, which you talked about earlier, Casey, which a lot of our people will send notes on people, and we keep that stuff going back and forth. It's important to, create the whatever the positives that are coming out of an organization, to just keep those running through the fiber of the company.
All right. Let's see. Ron.
Yeah. And kind of in short, I said the word fun. I was kind of emphasizing a lot more specifically on the incentive trips and all the things that we do to celebrate the employees and the managers and all the things that, and all the people that work hard every day. But we do all sorts of stuff in terms, the President's Club, corporate events. We do the big rally every year for every manager. They come in and we do really extreme things. We do holiday parties for everybody at corporate, including all the managers from all over the country. We believe in really lean on Rich, everything he just said, and what the first two said as well. But retention is everything, right? So that's how we value it. If the people stay here, not just stay here and want to be here and help us get better, but they're also referring us top people that help us grow. That's really what we can gauge it with.
The other thing on that, Casey, we do have turnover. We're not prone to that, but we bring back 8 of every 10 over the years that have been here that have left. They've gone on. We encourage them if they think it's a better opportunity. But 8 of 10 of the ones that have left, we normally will hire back, because we'll get a call 4 or 5 months later and they'll say the grass isn't greener. Truly enjoyed the culture, the environment you have, and I want to come back. So we make sure everybody leaves on the right note, and then they're all eligible to come back. And that's another part of it.
Rich, that's an unbelievable statistic, and it should make people rethink ever leaving. Steve, what about you?
So, I think, from all of the things that we discussed, whether it's trips or, we're very proud of the retention of in particular, the very top people, referrals of family and friends. But we do put some more science behind the measurement of engagement and enablement. And we spend a tremendous amount of time on communication. And then we measure it annually through data, right? So there's call it the art and the science. So the art of how do we continue to foster and engage our teams and enable them to have the ability to, self-service and self-solve problems. But engagement and enablement are big things for us. And we spend a lot of time through communication and explaining, where are we? What are we doing? What's next? We call it Vision One once a month, and we could do a full State of the Union. And then multiple times we do colleague connection. And colleague connection are, it's various managers throughout the organization throughout the month giving update to small teams. And then annually we measure it. And we, through through very comprehensive scientific survey of how are we doing, right? So, you know, a lot of times you look in the mirror and you think you're doing great, and then the next thing you know, you got a lot of room for improvement in various spots. And we always have room for improvement, I think, in any business, in any category. But we actually measure it, and then we take the measurement, and then we create the next action plan for the things that we think would help our teams best. So I hope that answers the question.
Is part of enablement, Steve, because this is definitely going to impact your culture, and I don't know if you gentlemen listening in want to hear more, but I'd love to know, you've been doing this a long time as far as the engagement and enablement and the science of it. Has there been anything profound that you've learned that drives it more than another?
You know, look, direct managers matter a lot. So I think that's my opinion is, is there something that's more profound? A direct manager matters a lot as it relates to engagement and enablement. And that's my personal opinion.
Got it. Bobby, did you want to add anything to this question?
You know, the only thing that I was thinking of, Casey, I think there is a non-tangible element that needs to be utilized and measured, and something that I do personally with my team. And so I really look for them to kind of, I know you asked the question earlier, but I feel like with my team, there is a trust that they have in me to have open communication, open dialogues, because none of us are perfect, right? I mean, there's always challenges, there are always obstacles. Our division here at Planet is fairly new. We're about 18 months into it. So there are challenges, and if I can't have open dialogue, if I can't have this trust between me and my partners in the field, it's very difficult to build. And so, you know, when I was hearing other people, I know the President's Club trips and all those are great. And I would never belittle those because I've been part of those in my past career. I mean, in my career. But for me, it's about being able to have that connection with my managers across my division.
Thank you, Fabi. I couldn't agree more with all of you. And I'm asking some questions as we've been chatting that people have been sending over, specifically that one about is there anything big that stood out? And thank you, Steve. It was about the direct manager. So, gentlemen, I'll ask one more quick question, then I'll do a quick wrap up. And actually, let me just, for those of you listening in, I think you'd want to know that we are launching an executive engagement study in the mortgage industry to talk about state of engagement. So we hope that you'll participate. We'll be sending you a copy of the survey asking your thoughts. And as a result of you completing our post-event survey today, we're going to send you a recording of this webinar. We're going to also send you the executive guide to engagement and the 8 levers that drive engagement. Our contact information is on the screen. I'll end with a quick question to the team, to the panel. And let me just thank all of you up front for just your time. And you can feel that there's a passion for developing your people, pouring into your companies, making sure you're connecting your employees with their work. And a question's come over that talks about, you know, do your managers today, the direct manager, do they meet the standards that you want for them? And are you there? Are you struggling with it? You know, because I don't want it to sound like we're all just, it's all that easy. But that was a question relating to the direct manager. Are your managers actually executing fully to your standards? So who would like to go first?
I'm sorry, Steve, I'll jump on it. So I'd say generally, of course, right? And, you know, are there always spots where we can continue to improve? Sure. But en masse, you bet they are, and they're doing a great job. So we're pleased about it. And so, yeah.
Okay. Bobby?
I agree. It's Ron.
Ron,
sorry. I agree 100% with Steve. In general, 100% they are.
Excellent. Rich?
It's a great, great question, but I believe we are, or they are. But we talk to them on a regular basis every day just to make sure they are. But the feedback is I think they are.
Okay, Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, because we don't have a lot of legacy branches that I took on when I came on board, I've had the pleasure of hiring every manager for the most part in these branches. And so I want to kind of say that I wouldn't have hired them if they wouldn't live up to the expectation, right? So I feel like they're absolutely doing exactly what we all agreed upon.
Well, gentlemen, without a doubt, let me just say a big thank you on behalf of the team for your comments, your insight. You're all highly successful for a reason, and your companies are leading the way in so many arenas, from professional development and leadership. So I just want to say thank you from Zenix for your partnerships, as many of you are great customers, or all of you are great customers of ours. And those listening in, this is your first time and you'd like insight, you can call all four of them privately without me knowing if you're interested in hearing how they're leveraging us and what their real thoughts are when I'm not around. But on behalf of the entire Zenix team, I want to be respectful. Gentlemen, any parting comments?
No, Casey.
Thank you for having me, Casey.
Thanks
keep
for,
up the great
yeah,
job thanks, with Zenix yeah. and whatever you guys have been doing with us. It's been awesome.
Thank you
very much.
Appreciate your support.
Listen, I appreciate you guys. We're going to change this industry slowly but surely, one company at a time, one leader at a time. On behalf of the Zenix team, everybody, thanks for listening in. We hope today brought you some insight that greatness can happen in our industry. And if you are struggling, we're here for you. And if you're on your path without us, that's great. We're cheering you on. Have a great day, everybody. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/insidethemortgagemind.